Hey everyone, this is Leela Sinha. Welcome to Power Pivot, the podcast, version 2. This is where we talk about business, leadership, ethics, community, and the way it all fits together. I'm glad you're here. Hi everyone, and welcome back to Power Pivot. This is one of our bonus episodes where I get to interview a fabulous business owner. Today's guest is Paul Barron. He is an entrepreneur, multiple times entrepreneur, I understand, and has a long history in the business world. So we'll be talking with him about his history and what he's learned along the way. Thank you so much for being here.
Pleasure. Nice to be here. Nice to see you and meet your audience. I appreciate that introduction. Long history, of course, translates into he's an old guy. So yes, I'm 72 years old. I have been a serial entrepreneur. If we were going to do a quick description of what my professional career has been all about, I've identified products that I find that are innovative, and I take them to market. That's what I've done for most of my career, although I have owned everything from restaurants to sporting goods stores, retail, consumer packaged goods, manufacturing, distribution, many things. And so today I find myself with a wonderful new product that I'm launching, and it's about 5 years into it, and we create business opportunities for other people now. And so that's what my current business is all about, with what's called a vertical printing machine called the wall printer. That's what I'm doing today. But it's really about creating business opportunities for other people who want to reach their own financial hopes and dreams and goals for themselves and their families.
That's fantastic. So I'm curious about the wall printer. I did look at the website a little bit. It's a really interesting product, but I want to rewind a little bit and just ask, how did you get into entrepreneurship? Everyone's journey to entrepreneurship is really different. Some people were born into it. Some people just couldn't help themselves. How did you start?
Well, it's interesting that you say some are born into it, and I'm sure that's true, because I believe we are, if we're lucky enough to have good parents, which I was, you are influenced by them. And you take direction from them. My parents were the exact opposite of what my life became in terms of professionally. They both worked for the same company for 30, 40 years, basically their entire lives until they retired. Fortunately, they were able to enjoy retirement too before they passed some years ago. But at the same time, they liked the stability of that and the security. And I can't fault them or anyone else for finding companies who can support them and give them an environment that fulfills them, whether emotionally, financially, or professionally. I give credit to companies that, you know, large companies that people do hold on to for their entire lives, and some civil service jobs and other positions that allow them to do basically the same thing for their entire lives. That was never me. I always fleeted from one thing to another, and that's not always a good thing, but it is the seed of entrepreneurship, I believe. It's the fact that you can be influenced by something, whether internal or external, that drives you to wanting to do something. Now, that do something could mean you want to create a product, you want to find something innovative, you want to improve upon something, you want to find a path, a financial goal that might be achieved. Through either working for something or working for yourself. Entrepreneurship usually means working for yourself, but that's not really necessarily true. I've had some of my best entrepreneurial experiences with partnerships. And again, finding people that either complimented me because they had skill sets that I did not have, or they had the time, talent, or treasure. Those are the three things that I say are the ingredients to any entrepreneurial venture, the time to do something, the talent to pursue it and succeed, and then the treasure, the money to be able to withstand the needs of you, your family, and the business. And so sometimes you can do that independently, sometimes you do it with other people. And I've had successes, and I don't like to call them failures, but I call them lesser successes, when sometimes the partnerships didn't work out or the idea was a total bust. And I've had those experiences. Fortunately, my current situation is a winner. This one is a home run. And I don't mean that just financially. I mean that because it does provide a real level of satisfaction for me for what I'm creating for my employees. I have about 15 employees now. Everybody benefits by the success of the business, which is how I've always structured all my businesses. I'm not talking about the stock option kind of philosophy or culture, most of which never succeed. But everybody, if the business does succeed revenue-wise, everybody does participate and succeed in my business. That's the way I like to do things. And I find that that develops a team that takes ownership, because somebody said something to me a long time ago, which sticks to me today, and it maybe is the, what started me on my path for having my own businesses or trying to find my own path. I thought I did very well for this company, and the company did very well, I think, as a result of my efforts, which were in the sales area. And I asked for a raise after my first year, and I was very well paid. Yeah, very young in my 20s, making more money than I really thought I would at that time. And it was a very nice job, and I learned a lot, but I thought I still was underpaid. And I went into the owner of the company, and I said, I really enjoy working here, but I think I'm really due for an increase in compensation. And he said, Paul, he said, I'm going to tell you this, and take it for whatever it's worth. You are a wonderful worker. You've done great for the company. I will make sure that you're always being paid more than anybody else will pay you. But Paul, you will never make what you think you're worth unless you work for yourself and take the risks that go around having your own business. And so I thought about that for about 30 seconds, and I said, that makes a lot of sense, and I quit. And then I went to, I became an independent salesperson at that point, and I worked for myself and found a couple of companies that I could do some sales work for on a commission basis. And I made twice the money I was making for that company in half the time. And the quality of my life allowed me at that time to start looking at other options and other things to do. And that's when my journey really began. I started with a couple of sporting goods stores, went into the restaurant business. Then I went back to work for some companies because I realized there were things that I didn't know and I wanted to try to learn. And then I went back into my own path again on one thing or another. And now, 50 some years later, here I am.
So do you think he was right? Do you think it's true that people will never be paid what they think they're worth unless they work for themselves?
I do believe that. I do believe that. I think that's really the way it should be. When you're trying to price a product, for example, you know, you come up with a price based on the investment in raw materials or how much work it took to do that, the labor cost, the materials cost. But ultimately, the market tells you what something is going to be worth. And so when you price something, do you know whether you priced it too low or too high? You know, just look at eBay or Amazon and the auction type prices that things come up with, and that, you know, everybody's trying to undercut everybody by a penny or something like that to be the first one that people see when they do a search. Do you ever really know, you know, what you're worth except what somebody will pay for it? And then when somebody buys it, you say, oh, I should have asked for more. And so I think if you can do that with a product, why can't you do that with yourself? And so I believe that most people, if somebody's going to pay me for the time and the contribution I make, they think it's worth it. But I'll always think that if they think I'm worth it, I'm probably worth more. And so I do believe that. And then when you work for yourself, though, you have nobody to blame but yourself if you don't make any amount of money that you think you should. Then there's some other things going on. Either you've got the wrong product, you're not doing it well, you're not delivering good service, you've got bad people around you, you're paying too much for your raw goods, whatever it might be that contributes to you not achieving the financial goals or customer goals, whatever those goals might be. If you're not achieving what you expect, it's probably because you've done something to impact that. You can't blame anybody when you own your own business but yourself.
That's true. And I think it's interesting to think about the way that we, when we're looking at our business, the shape of our businesses and the way that we develop our businesses and how do we price things and how do we determine the value of things, you wouldn't be in the business if you didn't value what you were doing at some level, right? You have to think that it's worth money or you wouldn't be trying to sell it. And when you think you're the product and you're trying to sell it to somebody else, you think you're worth a certain amount of money. And anytime somebody says yes, there's this little question of like, oh, they said yes. Maybe they would have said yes. You know, somebody said to me, if you send out a contract and they say yes immediately, then you obviously underpriced yourself. And I don't know that that's necessarily true. I think sometimes you just have a perfect product market fit. But I do think it's worth examining. You know, what are we doing? How could I be making more money? How could I be doing this better? How could I be saving more time or more effort? How could I be improving my life, the life of the people who work for me, the shape of the company, the shape of the world? You mentioned earlier that your employees that you believe that your employees should also benefit when the company is doing well. How do you structure that?
Probably very foolishly. The way I structure it is it's strictly based on revenue. I give people a little bit of a percentage now of the revenue. Now, if I didn't have the proper profit margins, I couldn't do something like that. But I know my profit margins are such and my expenses are such, and that we're doing enough business to pay for those basic expenses of the business that it requires to continue to function, and that there is then room beyond that for, let's call it the leftover, that, you know, I could take and put into my pocket. I could reinvest it into the business. I do all of that. But there's also some amount that I can put aside. Now, I won't say that I've always taken that from a profitable pool of money. I haven't. Sometimes I've guaranteed people a percentage of the revenue the company makes when we did not have a profitable month or something along those lines. But still, when people actually raise their hands and want to buy what I'm selling, it is because of the people I have working for me. And they're the ones who have to support them. And I believe they should be compensated fairly. And they are. They are compensated fairly in a base salary or an hourly wage or a commission that they get. But beyond that, I believe that everybody deserves to benefit when the company benefits. And so that's all just the way it's been. I'm not going to say it's the smartest way to do things. I'm not going to say that I've always succeeded as a result of doing it that way, more so than maybe some of my employees, but that's okay. And I am doing well enough that I'm okay with this game plan. So time will tell whether or not it proves correct. I guess when I'm ready to exit the company and everybody looks under the covers and sees what it is I really have, then that person will determine the value of my company, because once again, something's only worth what somebody's going to pay for it. And so when that time comes, hopefully I've made the right decisions.
You know, I grew up outside of New York City. I don't know where you're located, but I grew up
I grew up in Long Beach, Long Island, but I'm in Bloomington, North Carolina now.
Okay. So I grew up in southwestern Connecticut. And so you remind me of all of the small business owners that I grew up around. The guys who just like, it was, you know, one guy and his 15 employees, and they were just doing the best they could for themselves and for their people. And I really appreciate that kind of like basic structuring of the company. You know, I've spent a lot of time in and around the tech world, and stock option, like you said, stock options, I don't know about that as a compensation strategy. There's a woman down in LA named Madeline Pendleton who runs a small brick and mortar store, and she is very active on social media. She talks a lot about the way she structures her business. And one of the things she does for her people is they do an absolute revenue sharing, and everybody in the company makes the same amount of money, which I think is a really kind of radical version of what you're doing. You obviously, you take a little bit out, you structure your compensation, you structure your compensation differently for different people, but it's the same basic idea that if the company does well, the people who work there are the reason that it's doing well. And so they should benefit from that. And it's working really well for her. It's people keep saying, oh, it can't be done. And she looks at them and says, please get out of my way. I'm busy doing it.
I actually kind of, that kind of resonates very favorably with me. It's not what I do. People have their different levels and their different hourly base rate and their compensation of shared revenue as well as the bonus structure of their compensation. But everybody being paid the same is an interesting concept. I would not discount that as something that has a great value in certain situations.
Yeah, it's been really interesting to listen to how she talks about it, because her principle is every life is worth the same amount. So a portion of every life is worth the same amount. So I should compensate people the same for that portion of their life that they're essentially selling.
I don't necessarily buy that, but I like the concept. I like the concept to the point of everybody being paid perhaps the same, but the bonus structure that I give, the revenue share, you know, that I think somewhere there has to be a sliding scale based on experience too. So, mm-hmm. you know, just to say everybody's a person and everybody's a life and everybody has value, yes, those are truths. But when you talk about compensation and the job that's needed to be done, you can't say that somebody who's had 10 years of education and another 15 years of experience is worth the same as somebody who just came out of high school. Mm-hmm. It's just those things don't balance just because they're both human beings.
Right. They contribute differently to your business.
Especially in terms of their capability to help the company realize its goals. That you have to there are other things to measure besides somebody's life. That's my opinion. But I like the idea. I like the idea. And once again, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If it works for her, wonderful.
Right. And it is working for her. I can also see your point. You know, absolutely somebody with a lot of experience and a lot of education in their particular area, which they are bringing to the company, is able to help the company further its goals, perhaps more efficiently, perhaps better, perhaps with fewer, you know, missteps. And that's worth compensating for. That's worth paying for.
Yeah, you know, we're not communists. You know, I'm a very proud American. I believe in democracy and I believe in capitalism. And mm-hmm. and I think that, you know, I'm somewhat socialist to a point that I think there should be a level base for people with right. health care, and everybody should be able to get education and to feed themselves and their families and live a quality of life. But beyond that, you know, your capabilities, your path that you choose to take or that you find yourself on may very well lead you in a different way, that it compensates you in a different way. And I believe if that's a positive thing in your life, by positive, and that doesn't necessarily mean money is positive, it can work against people just as easily as it can work for you. But if that's what you want and that's what you can achieve, America, that's what you deserve. And that's my feeling on that. So
Yeah. So I have two directions I want to go, and I'm trying to decide which one to go first. I think I'm going to go forward first and then backward. So forward is, I have a friend, we went to high school together, and we recently started talking again after years if not. And he runs a small business. He's got about 20 employees. And one of his challenges is that when people come into his company, they are relatively new at being at work at all. They're usually fairly young in the workforce. And so he ends up investing a lot of time and energy in just bringing them up to like a baseline level of like acceptability for going to work. You know, a lot of them have client contact, so they have to be able to meet certain standards of appearance, of behavior. What advice would you give him as he's trying to build his company to a place where maybe he doesn't have to put so much energy into building his staff? Or is that the best investment he can make to help people get up to speed? And if so, how can he keep them once they're up to speed instead of having to jump ship?
Kind of a follow-up to what we were just talking about. I mean, competency has a value. And so, and that value is also measured in the fact that though the people who reach a level of competence, whatever that might be for the task at hand, it's a quicker path for them to then achieve the goals that you're looking for, whether that be a marketing goal, a sales goal, product development goal, customer service, whatever that might be. You know, both the experience and the competency level that that person achieves only serves to help the task and the company that much quicker. So if you do bring people in, and I'm a very, very big advocate of doing that. I've always had interns. I'm in a town, Wilmington, North Carolina, where there's a University of North Carolina at Wilmington, a very large university branch of the University of North Carolina system, just like Sunny in New York has a large university system. And I've always had, every semester, I take one or two interns out of either the business school or the engineering to bring them in, to put them into the marketing area, the technical area, customer support, sales, and giving them that experience. Now, yeah, they come in totally green. They have no idea of what it is. Sure, they have their classroom learnings they've done, which are basically worthless, you know, but when you get into the real world. But letting them hone those skills does take the time from somebody. I hope that I identify people that can shadow somebody who's doing something and then by osmosis, if you will, pick up some of those skills and learnings that let them achieve a level of competency. And then, very honestly, you're going to find that some people who have absolutely no experience in anything, but they're young and they're fresh and they have ideas, if you listen to them, they may pick up a lot more than you think they do. They may need a lot less hand-holding and direction than you think that they do. Sure, they might not know your business today, but give them some time. Give them some time to my advice, if that's what we started this conversation about, is to these people, is don't assume that you need to go ahead and teach them everything. Let them just, you know, match them up with somebody who is doing it and see what happens. You know, tell them that you want them to understand what they're doing, because there's going to be a point at which they're going to do this themselves. And without spending a lot of time on that, it'll also tell you what kind of a person they are, how quick they can learn, how quick that they can influence the job that's really needed. And you'll also be very surprised, because as I have been time and again, is finding people who bring much more to the party than I ever expected. And they come up with fresh ideas and fresh eyes. And again, I'm 72. These people are all 22. Yes, I've got a lot of experiences and I've got a lot of set ways in the way I think things should be done. But I'm also open to the fact that somebody else comes at it with a total fresh perspective can really improve upon what we're doing. And that's happened time and again.
Thank you. That sounds like really sound advice. And I'm thinking now about the business you're in now, because I'm sure that when you were 22, you did not envision the wall painter as like the one of the businesses you were going to have. So tell us a little bit about this wall painting thing that you're doing.
Well, first of all, let me just, as a correction to the terminology, it's wall printing, not painting.
Oh, sorry. Wall printing.
That's okay. Nobody knows it. And that's one of the reasons why I'm doing it. I've had absolutely no experience in this. And so, and pretty much most of the things I've done in my life have been with products or services or technology that I've had no experience in. My hats that I've worn successfully are sales and marketing. I love developing relationships with people. I had a knack that I developed a reputation early on in my career of being able to take foreign companies' products, services, software, technology, something that I found in a country outside the United States that hasn't found its market here. And these companies want to come here because America is where the money is. And so a lot of these companies don't do that because either they don't understand the culture or the expense of bringing something across the pond, so to speak, whether it's from Asia going across the Pacific or Europe going across the Atlantic. They don't want to necessarily make that hurdle for the financial impact that it might require. But at the same time, everybody looks to America as the proving ground or the source for revenue and success.
So, if you can make it here, you can make it anywhere.
That's what I've done. I've identified other products to do that. But I've done it, I did that as a hired gun for companies. And what I mean by that, a commission salesperson. Where just like the people that are rewarded in my business, my performance dictated my success. I worked on commission. If I sold the product or got the relationship or delivered on what was necessary, I was compensated very well for that. So that's been my mindset along my whole professional career too, even though I have had times when I've needed and wanted a salary, and I went that stability route to be able to have a set income when it was necessary in my life, that I didn't want to take the risk. But most of the time I did. And anyway, I retired several times, actually, over the years.
I was going to say, I can't imagine you retiring. You just seem like your brain just keeps going and going.
I never have. So now my long-winded way of getting around to answering your original question about wall printing. And so I was retired about 6-7 years ago. But I'm always looking at things, or things are coming across my desk. And I was approached by a company, a German company, that had this vertical printing machine. It was like an inkjet printer on steroids. It was a device that would allow you to print artwork onto a wall, indoors, outdoors, pretty much any size you wanted. And it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. And I had never seen anything like it before. So those are the two ingredients that get my attention in something. Number one, it's got to be cool. Number two, it's got to be something I've never seen before. And then I ask myself, why not? And so this company presented me with an opportunity to take that product from Germany to market in the United States. At that point in my life, not only financially was I okay, but I also didn't want to be a hired gun anymore. If I saw something I liked, I wanted to own it or at least have an equity piece, because once again, I wanted my efforts to be rewarded. And I wanted it to be rewarded more than just a commission on a sale. And so I asked the company, I go, okay, this is a really cool product. How much do you want for your company? And so they said, no, Paul, that's not what we're here for. We're here to hire a salesperson. And so the conversation broke down right then and there, because I didn't do that at that point in my life. This is when I was 65 years old. And so, but I hung up the phone with them, or disconnected the Zoom call, which is what we had. And I said, wow, that is the coolest thing I'd ever seen. Now, I have no printing background, no artistic bent at all. My wife is a pianist, but and plays wonderful. I'm musically tone deaf, or whatever the expression is. No advertising experience to speak of. You know, again, my hats were sales and marketing, building relationships with people. But this was a product that I saw was so cool, and I'd never seen it before. So after I finished my conversation with them, I said, which I always say at this point, why haven't I seen this? So I did my homework. I found out that literally were only a handful of companies that did this. There were two Chinese companies. There was this German company. There was an Australian company and a company in India. None in the United States or North or South America. And that's one of the reasons, of course, that I hadn't seen this before, because it didn't exist here. And so, and then I found out that the German company was really a copycat from one of the Chinese companies that invented this technology. And so when I started looking under the covers, I found out that this one Chinese company, the originator of the technology, that was priced at about half of the German product, was in fact more fully featured than this product. And the more I learned about the technology and how people would use it, and doing all the homework I do, because I'm very anal like that, I'll dig into something to ad nauseum before I'll make a decision on it. So I sent some people to Beijing to check out the company, to make sure it was a real company, not somebody working out of their garage. And I had a vision for this product that I thought was so cool to be a machine that would let other people be in the business of putting art on walls. That was my vision for it. So I wanted to make sure that they could support that vision with production and supply chain and everything else. Anyway, they ticked all the right boxes. The other three companies, there was a second Chinese company and an Australian and Indian company. I rejected them for one reason or the other. We don't have to get into. But the bottom line, there were only two quality products then, 6 years ago. There's only two quality products now, the German product and my product. And feature for feature, my product is better. I will let my customers prove that correct. I don't have to get into the details of that, because I don't want
the salesman coming out.
These conversations are not a sales pitch for my company. It's more about the journey. And so typically when I get to the point that I say, yeah, I'm going to do this, I call to my wife and I say, hey, Maureen, come take a look at this vertical printing machine I found. And rather than come into my home office, which is where I am right now talking to you, rather than come into that office, usually she goes and she cuts up my credit cards and changes the password on my bank account. You know, because she goes, oh, here we go. Paul's going to invest in something bananas again. And so, but this time she looked and she saw it and she thought it was the coolest thing she'd ever seen. And she says, you think you can do something with this? And I said, yes, I do. And she said, well, go ahead and go for it. So I got the buy-in from my wife, which is important to me. And so I went and I bought into the manufacturing, and I developed a relationship with this manufacturer where I'm a co-owner of some new patents that we've developed over the years. Now I'm fast forwarding. I own all rights to the Western Hemisphere with my company. I manufacture and supply everybody from Canada, the United States, Mexico, South America, the Caribbean, all out of my Wilmington, North Carolina warehouse and offices. And so that's what we're doing today. And we've grown. We have over 150 customers today. And what a customer means, we were very honored last year. We were awarded Entrepreneur of the Year, which is a very big honor here in North Carolina. It's a contest. It's an award that's given to the company being identified as the company that who would you invest $100,000 in? That's what the judges or the judges are tasked with. Pick the company, and there's hundreds of applicants. The reason we were selected over all others was really not because it was a company they would invest in, but what they really liked about the wall printer, which is what I'm most proud of, is that every customer we have becomes a new company. Everybody that buys a wall printing machine establishes a company around this machine, or they've added a revenue stream to an existing company like a painter or a general contractor or an artist, muralist, photographer, interior decorator that already has customers that could use this machine. Or if there's somebody like half of my customers are that have never had a business before, they also don't know anything about printing or signage or artwork, and they just think for $35,000, which is, by the way, what these machines cost, for $35,000, they can start a business with something. Now, truth be told, as I have learned over the years, and as anybody who gets into business will learn very quickly, it's not just about the tool that you need. Nobody goes into the restaurant business because you buy a stove. You know, you go into the restaurant business for many other reasons, and a stove is necessary. Well, you have to want to be in business. You want to have that. You have to be willing to take a risk. I always tell people that talk to me and say, hey, that's really cool. I'd like to be in that business. Well, I say, well, hold, slow down a minute. You know, there's good news and bad news. The good news is you're probably going to be the first one in your town to be doing this. The bad news is you're going to be the first one in your town to be doing this. So you better understand that you've got to introduce this to people. You've got to market it. We're not a franchise. I didn't want this to be a franchise. We don't set up people's websites for them. We don't dictate what they charge. We make sure the machines work for them. That's my business. My business is selling machines and making sure our customers are trained, supported. They have the proper tools they need day in and day out for these machines to work. Who they want to sell to, that's on them. It's a marketing business and a service business. They have to learn how to deal with customers, just as I've done over my life. They have to learn to provide good customer service at a good price. When you're buying something like ink that costs about 50 cents a square foot, but you can sell it for $20, $30, $40 a square foot when you finally deliver the product, there's a lot of room. It's a nice markup, and it's deserved, and people pay it every day of the week. And so it's a really good business for somebody else, and we make sure that they're successful. And it doesn't always work. Sometimes people buy it because it's really cool, but they don't want it. Do everything required to be in business, or they don't do it enough to make a lot of money when it's just a side hustle to what, because they don't want to make that leap out of their day job to put all their efforts and energy into a business. That's the entrepreneurial spirit that many people do not have and don't have sometimes for very valid reasons. Like they've got families to support. They got kids to put through college or whatever else. That's another reason why my life went the way it was. We weren't really blessed with children, my wife and I, so we didn't have those responsibilities. We went the puppy route. I've got a couple running around here. We have our children of the four-legged type. They don't ask for the car keys and there's no college fund. So we had a little bit more flexibility for me to do the kinds of things that I like doing. And again, not everybody can do that. But if it's right for you, you know, it's can be a fulfilling path or it could be a financial disaster. It depends. You have to have the right attitude that it's not how many times you get knocked down, it's how many times you get up that matters.
Right. Get up with that one more time. When people come to you and they're interested in starting a business with the wall printer and they've never been in business before, they don't know entrepreneurship like in their gut, what kinds of support or advice or help do you give them? Or do you just say, yeah, we're just going to sell you the printer? Because it sounds like you do more than that. I can't imagine you just letting people walk.
Yeah, well, we obviously do tell them and make sure they understand that it is not just a printer, that it is a business that requires marketing, it requires support, it requires somebody to be able to, you know, manage the books. They have to have a vehicle to transport this machine because this machine is designed, doesn't have to, but it's designed to go to a customer site, to a restaurant, to a school, to a doctor's office, to a museum and print on the walls. But it can also do signage. You never actually leave somebody's home, office, garage, or whatever. But they have to know that they need a vehicle. They need to feed their family still. They need to find the customers and do marketing. Now, we do give them some of the tools. The same way that people find us, which is through social media. I don't go to trade shows. I don't go into communities and show people this machine and how it works. We have a place. We have We attract people through YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, all the social media channels. We show them videos. We show them, we tell them how much it costs. We say, is this something interesting to you? And that starts the conversation. At that point, we do caution them that it's more than just the machine. It requires maintenance. It requires somebody to handle it. It's no different than a painter who has a paintbrush. You got to wash it after each time. On machine, some stuff. You have to do something. It's not going to do it by itself. It's not one of these. You build it, they will come. It doesn't work that way. I don't know any business that really does, or any website that's going to attract people if you don't do the right stuff underneath it that requires other skill sets to attract people to your website or to your storefront or to your restaurant. I don't care if you're a doctor or selling hamburgers. You got to get people into your place. You have to provide good value, a good product, good service, and you have to know how to price it. But all of those things, are the things that they need to know. We do give them some tools. We do give them some guidance. We know what people have paid for these services. Like I said, I can tell them very matter-of-factly and factually what their costs are going to be and what they may need to consider. But ultimately, it'll be up to them what to charge a customer. They'll have to figure that out themselves. We'll give them guidelines and they can start there. And then, like we said at the very beginning of our conversation, find out the market supports it or the market doesn't. People in Mexico have a different economic environment than the people in New York City or Chicago or Dallas, and Des Moines is different than Atlanta. So, everybody has a market that they're going to approach, a price for the services that they're going to expect or try to get. And people just have to do that themselves. So we don't hold their hands through that process.
Right.
We try to give them as much guidance as we can.
And part of that is because they know their market. If you're in New York City and you need to drive a sizable truck around, you're probably going to have to budget a certain amount for parking tickets. Like, that's just got to be a cost of doing business.
Yeah, and you're going to have walk up. So you need somebody to carry this 125-pound machine up three flights of stairs sometimes.
Right.
Everything is not just drive in and roll the machine in, which you can do if you're on a level field, but that's not always the case. So you may need two people. You may need, an extra person.
Extra insurance for when you drop it.
Yeah, our machines only require somebody to babysit the machine while it's printing, but it does need some attention like that sometimes. So, it does require these other things. We try to, we're there for support. I think my team provides outstanding support to our customers. I think that really is what separates us from anybody in this business, even though we only have one competitor. But what really separates us is the support we give our customers. And we want them to succeed. This other company that has a very quality product, but they also provide services to their customers. They compete with their own customers by providing services. Mm-hmm. We don't do that. We just provide the machines and we help them succeed in servicing their customers. We don't compete with our customers. And we don't provide the services. Even in our own backyard in Wilmington, we have somebody who bought the Wilmington territory and services that themselves. And so that's our business model.
What's your favorite success story? Do you keep track of these folks once they've bought the machines? Do you watch them grow?
Yeah, we do. We watch them grow and we watch the ones that don't grow. We learn as much from them and who our customers. We're always trying to figure out who the best customer is from those experiences. And we have our favorites, the ones who are really, really doing it and doing it well and enjoying it and get customers who are really happy as a result of that. And that's going to be true in any kind of business. There are people who volunteer to be, to give testimonials and to entertain other people when at the very beginning, somebody said, okay, it looks interesting, but let me see who else is doing it. Sure, if you want to be in the hamburger business, you can go and look at McDonald's and Burger King and Wendy's and Hardee's and all of these places. You want to be in, you want to be an electrician or a plumber or a lawyer or a doctor. There are lots of things that you can look at to say, is this what I want to do? Or is this what I want to go to school for 10 years to learn how to do? There are those things. That didn't happen with this. So the ones at the beginning were the real risk takers. They were willing to be, the trailblazers for something totally new. They're the ones who, for the most part, are the most successful ones. The ones that say, oh, let me see what they're doing, that kind of stuff. They're a little bit more cautious, which I respect that. But that's not necessarily what's going to make somebody successful in this or not. Just because they've convinced themselves that it can be successful. You still need to have that personality that will let you take a risk on being the first kid on the block to introduce something to your market. Because right now we've got 150 customers, and I don't know whether you or your audience may say that's a lot or that's not so many. I think it's a lot. We sell about 1 to 2 of these a week now, which is great. And when we sell it, not only is it a machine, but it's also possibly it's at our customer's option. We will sell them an exclusive territory. Again, we're not a franchise, but we'll sell them a territory where they're the only ones we will sell printers to, because we want to award the people who did raise their hands first. And when somebody else does see it, like the hamburger places and the coffee shops and the pizza restaurants, when somebody sees it and says, hey, that's really cool what Paul is doing over there. I'd like to do that too. Well, we won't talk to them at that point. We will send that person's interest to the person who's there already and say, do you want to hire this person? Do you want to sell them a wall printing machine and let them wall print in your community? You know, what do you want to do? We don't deal with them at that point, because we support the growth of the people who've raised their hands first. Of course, that comes with obligations. If we don't sell printers to anybody in their territory, they're going to have to buy more printers. And so there is an obligation that goes along with that awarding of territory. But if they're successful, they're making money, they're doing business, there's no lacking walls in this world. That's what makes this business so good. Every room, I mean, I'm looking at your room. You know, you could use some artwork on your wall there. Everything behind me here is a wall print. Not on the walls, because my wife doesn't let me print to the walls in my house. But at the same time, you don't have to print directly to a wall. You can, and it's beautiful when you do. But that picture of my dog is with Santa Claus. That's on paper. This over here above my head is on canvas. And the other ones are on paper or acrylic or something else, glass or something. You can print on anything. You can hang it on the wall just like a picture. It doesn't limit you. And the customers are everywhere. So I don't think my customers are ever going to run out of customers. And, you know, it's anybody who's got a wall. And we also have a floor printer now. So we print on floors too. Mm-hmm. So, but there's, of course, every room has 4 times as many walls as floors. So there's more money to be made with the wall printer than the floor printer. Most of the floor printers have been sold to companies that are in the flooring business for customers that want to put their logos or something on the floor, or their school emblem on a basketball court or something like that.
Yeah, although I can imagine a residential application where, you know, it's no longer parquet flooring. It's now a printed, painted floor.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just like, you know, wood floors have migrated into tile that looks like wood. You know, now you can actually have wood that gets painted to look like any kind of wood, or put a mosaic design instead of doing it with tile, do a mosaic time and print it in your foyer.
Right. So, and then when you don't like it, have it sanded off and you can change it.
The beauty of this wall printing business is that you don't like the picture, you get tired of it, primer over the wall and start again. If it's on glass with a razor blade, you can scrape it off. If it's on brick or something, you can just use a sandblaster or a power washer and get rid of it. So it's easy to change, much easier than people who slap up a vinyl sticker or wallpaper on a wall. And of course, if you're going to spend the money to have a muralist, and this is again a business that doesn't take the food off of the table of artists. We actually see this, and we see it every day, as a way for artists to create their art, but don't just sit there for days or weeks printing something when we can do it in hours. Create your art, create the picture, and then we digitize it and we print it. It doesn't take the food off their table. It just lets them be more creative more frequently, which is what their real business is, I believe.
Making the art. So tell me, can you like draw me a picture of what your most successful customer looks like? Not a particular person, but like in general, what are the qualities of your most successful customers? The ones who buy a machine and then are able to really make a go of it.
Well, a successful customer, number one, first and foremost, is one who cares about their customers. So the ones that have that service mindset, that they care about the customers. When somebody says, I'd like this wall to have this kind of a picture or something like that, and you have identified the fit picture or the customers presented you with the picture, delivering it, looking, and this is no different, I think, than anybody in any profession. When you can be satisfied with the work that you've done, you're going to be successful, your customers are going to be happy, you're going to get referrals, your business is going to improve. And those people that go through that path are the ones who are the most successful. And of course, success generates revenue. I don't know people who don't like revenue. and profit. So when you do that, then you want to grow. You want to maybe hire somebody to do this because you realize that these machines don't require printing expertise. We can train anybody to use these printers and to maintain them. It just requires somebody to go out and do it. And if you market and find your customers, you will be successful. And you provide good service at a fair price. So the people who can do that, you know, you can't be too much of a perfectionist with these because it's not a photographic duplication. You're spraying ink onto a wall, so there may be some slight imperfections or so. But most of the art that's done with these wall printers are viewed from a distance, although they will print very fine text. We've had customers print descriptions of artwork and sculptures in museums where it prints on the wall with descriptions. It'll print signage just like anybody else will create a sign for something. So it can do that. You can print the menu of a restaurant on a glass window, you know, but at the same time, and if the menu changes, scrape it off and start again. But the successful ones, again, I'm not trying to avoid or evade the question of who or what makes somebody success, but it's really all over the map. It comes from customer service more than anything else. Nobody is going to be successful in this business or really any business if you can't take pride in what you do and fulfill the expectations or exceed the expectations of your customer. Do that and you're successful and you're happy.
So what makes them good at marketing? Because that's the other thing you've said over and over this entire time. You keep saying, you know, if you have to be able to market, you have to be able to take a product that nobody knows about and make it appealing enough that they'll buy it. So what makes people good at that? You're good at that. Do you know what it is about yourself?
No, I'm not. I was smart enough to hire people who know how to do that. And that's as much as I love, respect, and reward the people who do that for me, there are a lot of people with these skill sets out there in every community. So this isn't something unique to me or to my company that anybody can't duplicate in their town, no matter how rural or no matter how urban it is. And what I mean by that is and we give them videos, we give them images of art, of the art that's been produced with this. And you just have to get it in front of people. Now, some of our customers do trade shows. They'll go to a home show or something like that where people go in and show home services and everything from insurance to hot tubs and spas and other other services that are provided, sunrooms and all that kind of stuff. And they'll go to something like that an event that's sponsored by interior decorators or something like that. You know, they'll do that kind of stuff, which we don't do. That's a way to get out into communities that you're going to service. Because me, I'm servicing everywhere in the whole Western Hemisphere. So I can't find those, nor do I really want to go to those really big shows that have thousands of exhibitors and people. That's just not my style. Not to say that I wouldn't be more successful if I did those things. Maybe I would. You know, maybe if I spent the money to advertise on TV or went on to Shark Tank, you know, maybe I'd be more successful more quickly. But I'm okay not being that way or doing what I'm doing. I'll let the person who buys my company do that and take it to the next level. I'll be very content by somebody else who can take my business to the next level. But to your point, Leila, we want people to market, find customers. You have to go out and maybe knock on the doors of schools and say, well, how much are you spending on art? We've sold to schools. We sold to a university in California. We sold to a STEM school in Chicago because they wanted their students to have some of the experience with something technical, but they wanted the artwork to be displayed more quickly on walls. The school in California that bought it, they spend tens of thousands of dollars every season changing out sponsor logos on walls and on in the locker rooms and around campus and things like that. And they wanted to do it themselves. Amazon just bought 6 machines from us because they don't want to sell it on Amazon. What they want to do is they want to decorate their warehouses, these big warehouses that just look like prisons. You know, they've got these huge facilities. And they said, wow, what a cool machine. Let's start printing stuff on the walls of our warehouses. And they bought 6 machines and we're just in the middle of training them now. So there's the customers are everywhere and walls are everywhere. So it's up to them to go out and find them. So that is the marketing that's necessary for something like this.
So they need imagination and they need initiative.
Absolutely.
And they need the willingness to go bang on the door.
That's why it's not for everybody, because not everybody has that. Not everybody wants to knock on doors. Not everybody, you know, wants to even hire somebody else or spend the money to go ahead and take out a Facebook ad or a Google ad or do something, you know, or know, understand how to do it or get the people who can do it. That's probably the biggest barrier for success of some of our customers is that they buy this machine and they think this is like a one-person operation. And it definitely is not. It's not a business that one person can do. You know, sure, one person might be able to be an accountant or a lawyer. But even if you look under the covers of those professions, they still have people that are doing things. You have a bookkeeper. You have somebody who, who perhaps is managing their customers and invoicing them. You know, there's always something else going on that you can't be one thing doing everything. And if you're marketing it and finding customers, you can't be the one who's sitting there babysitting this machine for 6 hours a day while it's printing this beautiful art. Otherwise, you're neglecting the opportunities that are out there to grow your business if you're just out there babysitting your machine. So you have to be willing to invest in more than just the machine and more than just the marketing. There's a lot of other aspects to business, and people need to understand that. And I think if I've had one failure in my approach to this, is I got so early on passionate about the machine and the technology that I ignored communicating those things to our customers. And so they fed off of my passion and my enthusiasm for the machine and said, yeah, I want one too. And so they laid down their $35,000, $40,000, $50,000, whatever it was, that they were able to afford. And then they realized, oh, I got to get customers. Oh, I got to buy a truck. You know, all these kinds of things that like should not have dawned on them, because we do tell everybody that. And we try to make it very clear what this business is. But most people see it for the same way that I saw it initially. Wow, really cool. I want one. So,
right. And I think that's an interesting, I think everybody who goes into business goes through that process of like, there's the thing, there's the actual thing that you're selling or that you're focused on. And then there's all the stuff around it. There are all the different pieces that have to be in place so that the thing that you want to do can happen. And if you want to do this thing, then you might need to hire someone to run the business so that you can do the thing you wanted to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's probably the biggest source of failure for people is that they don't look a little bit beyond their own passion or their own lane that their expertise falls into. You know, I did sales for a long time early in my career, and I had to go out and wine and dine people. And I'd go to five cities in 5 days and go to five different restaurants with people, going for lunch and dinner and trying to communicate what I was selling at that particular time. And so anybody who goes out to eat thinks they can be in the restaurant business. I was no different, young in my life, and I wanted that. But I was smart enough to know that I knew nothing about the restaurant business. So I did, in fact, go into the restaurant business, had a very successful restaurant that I founded with a friend who did know about the restaurant business. And that's what I needed, and that's what I was smart enough to get. And that restaurant that I founded in 1979 in a little town upstate New York, now it's 1979, so 45 years later, that restaurant is still open. I sold
That's
my interest.
Amazing.
It is amazing. I'm very proud of that, but it's had three owners since I got out in 1990 after 12 years. But the fact that it survived and basically has the same menu I created in that restaurant with my partner 45 years ago, it's still there today. Every time I travel up into New York, I take my wife there for lunch or dinner, and it gives me a great deal of pride. But I never would have gone into that business by myself, but many people do. And, you have to be smart enough to know what the business involves, and whether it's a restaurant or a car repair business or a painting business, whatever, you have to do your homework.
Yeah. I know I have listeners in upstate New York. Can you tell us what that restaurant is?
Yeah, Ward's Bridge Inn in Montgomery, New York.
Excellent. Thank you.
It started out as basically a local bar that we converted into a 75-seat restaurant in a town that never knew anything but chili and hot dogs. And we made it into an upscale restaurant, and we promoted it in New York Magazine. And we got people who are coming up into the Hudson Valley on weekends who are willing to spend $50, $100 on dinner. And everybody in the local community thought we were out of our minds. Right. But during the time we had it in the first couple of years, we grew from 75 seats to improving upon the building and making improvements on it, to it became a 150-seat restaurant, and had a nice piano bar, had an hour-long wait there for dinner all the time. Then we bought adjacent property, and we made a little bed and breakfast out of that. So it was a wonderful experience. And again, I'm happy to say that restaurant is still open today. And anybody who wants to go into Montgomery, New York, it's, if you don't know where that is, it's near Newburgh, New York, in Orange County, New York. And it's called Ward's Bridge Inn. And it's a great restaurant, of which I have no vested interest in anymore. So I'm not promoting it for my own benefit. But and in fact, when I go up there, we do go up there pretty much once a year, I actually don't go to that restaurant because my chef, who I had, he ended up opening up his own restaurant. And I really like him, and I like what he's done. So whenever we go up there, we go to his restaurant, which is a few miles down the road. And his restaurant is called The Lake House in near Newburgh, New York. So if anybody wants another good restaurant up there, go to that restaurant. That was a plug for the restaurant. The other one was not a plug for mine.
Well, thank you for sharing those. I'm sure my listeners will appreciate it. So we are just about at the end of our time. Is there any last advice that you want to give people or reflections on your career? You've had such a long and storied career. You've been obviously such a successful salesman and entrepreneur, and now you're in this new venture. And I have to say, I know a lot of 72-year-olds who do not have nearly the active, engaged relationship to life that you do. So I hope that I can be 72 like that.
Well, I appreciate that. I hope it doesn't end. You know, people keep saying as they turn 40, 50, 60, 70, it's the new 30, 40, 50, 60 or whatever. I hope they're correct. But I also firmly believe that, you know, the more you do, the more you can do. And so, you know, that is something that I do enjoy getting up. I play tennis. I swim. I do other things. And you need other things in your life besides just working. At least I believe I do. And that keeps me going too. And if I was going to give advice to anybody about anything, my whole life has been based on great relationships. That's what it's about. Being nice to the people on the way up because they're the same people you're going to see on the way down. It's, you know, create relationships. Some will be good. Some won't be good. Some will satisfy and propel you. Some will drag you down. But put yourself out there, you know, be open and honest with people and learn from everybody that you encounter. Because it's to me, it's all about relationships. That relationship may become a partnership. It may become a customer. It may become a vendor. It may become your wife. You never know, or your husband. You know, you just can't tell where friendships and relationships go. But that's the single most important thing that's gone through my entire life and career is just developing relationships with people, networking. You know, anybody wants to connect with me, go onto LinkedIn. You know, that's not an advertisement for LinkedIn, but it's a good professional network. And most people have a LinkedIn profile. I'm always happy to connect and learn what other people are doing or share, you know, any kind of input that I might give that might help a person or warn them. The old Yogi Berra, when you get to a fork in the road, take it. You know, you never know where those warning posts will pop up. So anyway, I'm always happy to connect with people.
Well, I think anybody who decided to connect with you would do very well in that conversation. Again, I've been speaking with Paul Barron. He is with The Wall Printer. I misspoke earlier, Wall Printer. And that's at thewallprinter.com?
Correct. Yep, thewallprinter.com. If they want to know anything about that, and as I said, if they just want to connect with me, LinkedIn is the best way. But yeah, if anybody wants to learn something about this particular machine and business opportunity, thewallprinter.com.
The Wall Printer and Paul Barron. Well, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you. And I really appreciate you taking the time.
I hope your audience enjoys it.
Thank you. Take care.
This has been Power Pivot, the podcast. I'm your host, Leela Sinha. Thank you for listening. I offer gratitude for the earth and sky and the support and care of many who cross my path. Our post-production assistance is provided by William Jameson, and you can find him at jamesonav.net. You can find more of me and my work, including leadership consulting and keynotes, at intensivesinstitute.com.